Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Let's go back now and see if we can find the third president of the United States. Use our Wayback machine here. Thomas Jefferson, are you there, sir?
Good day to you, citizen.
We found him. Mr. Jefferson, I hope you are well. Thank you for joining us today.
I am well. Monticello is always extremely beautiful at this time of year, and I am fortunate to live high on a mountain, far away from the dense crowds of Charlottesville or Williamsburg or Richmond.
Yeah, if you guys had a virus like this, that's wipe you guys out. You didn't have any medicine and stuff.
I lived through one in 1793, the yellow fever epidemic in Philadelphia. It killed 1 in 10 people there, and it caused very widespread panic. The government of the United States was headquartered there then and had to move away. I was fortunate I was not infected with this disease. We didn't really understand what it was, how it was spread, how we might combat it. So you, with your better science, what you call epidemiology, have a great advance over the people of my era.
It's funny, though, because now that you mentioned, I do recall you mentioning that last time we talked to you, and yet in your era and in ours, the best medicine is to stay away from each other. It's a social solution. It's not a biological solution, and I suppose in each case that would be hard to enforce.
Well, our medicines were so primitive, so Dr. Rush, a good friend of mine, Benjamin Rush, was the hero of the yellow fever epidemic, and he used bleeding and purging as his medical treatment of those who were ill. They probably damaged people more than they helped them. So we didn't have any way to treat these. The first true vaccination, the first true vaccine, came from Edward Jenner, an English physician, in 1796, and that was for smallpox. So things have changed dramatically in science. Between my time and yours, we had no choice but to engage in what you call social distancing. We boarded up houses. We painted red crosses on them if people inside were infected. We stopped shaking hands for more than a year. People across the street to avoid houses where there was known to be infection. And so this was the only technology we had. You have much better technologies in your time.
Well, we can keep people alive longer, but it's just fascinating to me that what we're left with today is some of the very same methods you had back then. But I want to ask you about something else. I took a call from a woman yesterday, and that's why I called you today. Thomas Jefferson's on the phone line. If you want to join us, give us a call. 312-981-7200. Not many radio hosts in America get to say that, but I'm not kidding. As you may well know, Mr. Jefferson joins us each year, sometimes twice a year on stage. We have a conversation, not unlike this. Then we take questions from the audience. It's usually enlightening. It's always enlightening. It's sometimes kind of humorous. But we're not going to be able to do this show this year because of COVID-19. So we will definitely ask you to come back to Chicago next year. But in the meantime, racial violence has broken out across the country. And the question becomes, what's a way for people to protest? Can they protest quietly, or what happens if it gets violent? A woman called in yesterday, and this is part of our conversation.
Hi, John. I'm wondering if you're feeling any remorse or regret at having spoken with Thomas Jefferson recently about sometimes you got to burn down the post office and throw rocks. I think you're feeding violence. Violence begets violence. I think that accomplishes nothing but enraging people, and once you start feeding anger, you're building up the anger. What do you think about it?
I thought when Thomas Jefferson said that, and he has to us many times on stage, and will probably again next fall when he comes to town, it made sense in that context. It was appropriate at the time. We would still be a county in England if we didn't revolt.
So you think that violence is an answer to change, is a response for change?
I don't think it's the only response, but I think sometimes it's warranted.
Well, I have to disagree with you. I think you're only feeding the enraged and making things worse. When violence begets violence, if that's what you're going to do to solve problems, you're not going to solve problems, as we have proven.
Thanks a lot, Thomas Jefferson.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I'm maybe not the best person to talk about this question because I was a slaveholder, and the race tensions that continue to exist in the United States in your time are part of the legacy of the founding generation. We wrestled with the problem of slavery, but we were not able to fix it. And I myself own several hundred slaves. But I will say this about rebellion, that at some points, people have exhausted all peaceful means of petition, writing letters to their mayors or to their congressmen or to their president. They have written op-ed pieces. They have published pamphlets or broadsides, and no change has come. And so when a subjected people, an oppressed people, have endured more than any human being should ever have to endure, and they have tried every possible peaceful means to call attention to their plight, then and only then they have a right under natural law to raise the temperature, to march in the streets, to menace public officials if necessary, to burn down a building if necessary, to use strategic violence. I'm not in favor of that. I'm a lover of harmony and peace. I never struck anyone in the whole course of my life. But I did say to James Madison, I like a little rebellion now and then. It's as important in the political world as thunderstorms are in the natural world.
Hmm. Yeah, here's my problem with that. Okay, fine. But then pick your targets, right? Like, do the people that run a camera shop downtown deserve this? What did they do wrong? In fact, some of these people were great advocates of hiring minorities and integration and in being places for change. So then what do you do about that, Mr. Jefferson? Lots of phone calls for him, too, and not just about this. TJ can't join us on stage this year. I'm going to keep calling him once in a while, and you can join us right now, 312-981-7200. The American Lung Association is here to help you through the COVID-19 pandemic with science-based information you can trust. They have resources on protecting lung health, especially for those with lung disease, medical experts to answer your questions, webinars, and online communities. Visit lung.org to stay informed about COVID-19 and lung health. And while you're there, if you're able, your donation to their life-saving mission is needed now more than ever. Visit lung.org.
Grandview buys homes. Hi, I'm Tom Detlich, and I want you to know Grandview was buying homes more than a decade ago during the Great Recession, and we are buying homes today, and we'll be buying homes tomorrow. We are the largest direct home buyer in Chicagoland for a reason. We don't come and go with the times. Grandview is committed to buy your home today no matter what the markets are doing. If you want to sell your home but are concerned about its value today or what it'll be tomorrow, call us now for a fair cash offer. Put your mind at ease and leave the stress and the mess to us. GrandviewHomes.com.
From hardworking...
Kiss my grand!
I'm on TV.
...to bewitching...
My wish is your command.
Donald, isn't that marvelous?
The women of Antenna TV do it all. Watch on 9.2 or check your cable listings.
Coming September 1st to WGN America. News Nation, originating from Chicago, live every night in primetime. Your news, your nation, only on WGN America.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
1044 on WGN Radio. Thomas Jefferson, third president, your United States, on a phone line. And appropriately so, he's a regular guest of our show on stage. He comes on sometimes on the phone or even in studio, but that's more difficult this year with COVID-19. So we asked him to just comment a little bit on a woman who called in yesterday and said, John, you always say, Jefferson said, every now and then you got to burn down the post office. And when he says that on stage, people kind of gasp and also kind of chuckle because that would never happen. Well, it happened. But, Mr. Jefferson, they were also burning down people's businesses that had nothing to do with this.
That is an issue. You know, that's the problem of mobs. We want a system, and Mr. Madison tried to devise one for us, in which we could resolve our disputes amicably through debate in the halls of Congress or in the state capitol, where we have the capacity to amend the Constitution or to impeach public officials, or in your time to initiate new legislation coming from the sovereign, the people themselves. So the attempt was made to avoid armed insurrection or mobs in the streets because, as you say, they're a very imperfect tool of rebellion and protest. But sometimes things get so bad that this becomes inevitable. I watched the French Revolution unfold. I was horrified by it, and yet I defended it. And I said to my protege, William Short, if there were one Adam and one Eve alive in every nation and alive free, that would be better than all of the situations of history. And when Lafayette, the great French patriot who came to help us win our liberty, when he wrote me lamenting the excesses of the Reign of Terror, I wrote back a relatively stern letter in which I said, did you expect to be transported from despotism to liberty on a feather bed? You know, sometimes the price of human liberty is violence, and I'm afraid to say that sometimes when oppressions have become too deeply rooted and have ground the people to powder, as was the case before the French Revolution, when the people finally rise up, they will not be strategic. There will be bloodbaths, and there will be imprecise uses of violence, and this, alas, is the price of human liberty.
Well, whatever means you use, what bothers me right now is there does not seem to be an end. You know what's missing, I think, in this whole dialogue nationally and locally? I mean, every now and then some city or governor will throw out a Band-Aid, or some agency will say, we need to have a police protection board or something like that. But there really isn't a sort of top-down national voice or idea about what to do to fix this. Like, yeah, the police should not kill men in the street. What are we going to do about that? So we're rioting over that, but I don't know what the fix is. I don't know if it's a law. I don't know if it's a different politician or politicians per se. I don't know what the fix is, Mr. Jefferson, and I haven't heard anybody even talk about that.
Well, I have to say that I bear such an important burden of responsibility for this. You know, I was a liberty-loving man. I wrote all men are created equal, but I owned human beings. I bought and sold slaves. Eight of the first 12 presidents were slaveholders. And so we gave you this legacy. I said in my book Notes on Virginia that the legacy of slavery would last for centuries, if not forever, and that there would always be racial tensions in America because our founding relationship between Africans and white Europeans was one of slavery. They were not brought here voluntarily. They came in slave ships. They were sold at auction to the highest bidder. They were whipped, sometimes used to breed new slaves. Torture, rape, death, all this was done with impunity on the worst sorts of plantations. And so we, the founding fathers, although we worked at this, we tried to resolve this question, we didn't get it done. And I knew that the legacy of this was going to percolate for a very long time. I'm sorry to hear that it continues to percolate in your time, but it seems to me that it's not irrational to realize that a nation committed to principles of the rights of man, who systematically violated them for several hundred years, and in some sense apparently still does, that nation is going to have occasional outbursts of anger, rage, and even riot.
I want to take a couple phone calls for Mr. Jefferson, and that's Don. We'll start with you. You're on WGN. Don, what's your question? You're on the air.
Hello, King John. Hello, Mr. President. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not sure how this would apply to your time, President Jefferson, so I'll try my best. What would your feelings be on a president using police or military force to clear himself a pathway from one venue to another venue, the second venue being a church in this case, to clear peaceful protesters out of there with military force so that he can have an opportunity to get his picture taken while holding a Bible up in front of a church?
Where would you ever get such a question? What a crazy idea. Now, Mr. Jefferson,
I just made it up.
What's your response to that, Thomas Jefferson?
I just can't imagine that this could ever happen, that a duly elected president of the United States, a servant of the people, would engage in the sort of autocratic behavior that we look for in dictators and despots. That I thought was something we left behind in the old world. And it breaks my heart if what this gentleman says can be true, because a president is not a person with unlimited power. And we have a very strong difference in this country between civilian authority and the military. We separated them and made sure that the Secretary of War was not himself a militarist, and that the civilian authority always dominated the military and the military's tactics.
That's an interesting point. We don't think about that. We don't think about that, that's not a general reporting to another general, and now you've lost control of the guns in the military. That's a civilian appointee by a duly elected president, right?
It's heartbreaking to me because if that's true, if this incident occurred, then you can by no means believe that you are a free people any longer. The president is one individual, first among equals perhaps, selected by the American people to lead them for a short time. He does not have the authority to use violence against the people of the United States. Unless, you know, his life is at stake, unless there is an attack on the White House or the president in some other setting, but to proactively go out and beat heads and use chemicals to damage peaceful protesters is something that you would expect in a tyrannical world like ancient Russia or the 9th or 10th century, you know, one of the Mongol hordes, or the barbarians that descended upon Rome in the 3rd century AD.
Well, let me ask you this. What if the federal government, seeing unrest across the country, wants to use federal troops, even the U.S. Army, to quell the violence?
Quell the violence. There would have to be a revolution of extraordinary proportions to justify that. You know, every community has its own police force. This should be decentralized to the maximum extent possible. Of course, the government's role, an essential role, is to keep order. And so if there are people looting or breaking things or burning things, it's not that the government should stand by and enter into a dialogue. Mm-hmm. The government has a moral and constitutional duty to maintain peace, restore order, and protect property and the lives of its citizens. It needs to do that as gently as possible, but it needs to do it firmly, and I don't believe that any government should stand by and watch the destruction of people's lives or property without taking strong action. But that action should be taken at a local level, and it should be the minimal amount of force required to restore order.
Gentlemen, we have just another couple of minutes with Thomas Jefferson. Mike, I'll take your call, too. We didn't get to many of them, but we got to a few here. Mike, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
I just wanted to ask the question, exactly what were you thinking when you wrote, "All men are created equal," as you looked over a field of hundreds of human beings doing work that you were too lazy to do, frankly? It seems schizophrenic almost. And don't you think it's about time that, because there were so many founding fathers who owned human beings and used them like chattel, private property, that we take the founding father idea down a notch and not hold these people up as such demigods? If they can't be measured by the standards of today, you know, based on what history was like way back when, why should we not modify what they do today, considering all the changes
that
we've had?
That's an interesting way to put that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Mike. Or thank you, Mike. Go ahead, TJ.
Well, I hear the incivility in that comment.
Well, I think and he put it nicely.
I accept this. I mean, I have been saying that I and others of the Founding Fathers deserve the harsh judgment of history for our ownership of slaves. And if you wish to demote us in the pantheon of American worthies, you are certainly welcome to do so. I was a futurist who believed that the future would inevitably be better than the past, that we would progress towards greater and greater enlightenment. And so, of course, the only thing that I object to, aside from the incivility of the comment, is the suggestion that I was too lazy to do my field work myself. If this gentleman will read a single biography of me, he will find that I was the least lazy person who ever lived on the face of this planet.
Okay, then. By the way, thanks for the call, Mike. Everybody's getting their hair cut these days because we're finally able to kind of get out from under the cover of COVID-19 a little bit. You wore your hair pretty long, though, right?
I had my hair in a queue, you know, in what you'd call a ponytail, very fashionable in my era.
And were you a redhead? Is that correct?
I had a kind of a sandy auburn hair. I was easily sunburned. I was a freckled complexion and auburn hair. It turned gray later in my life. And I only wore wigs for a very few number of occasions, particularly when I was a diplomat in France between 1784 and 89.
And did you wash your hair much?
No, we didn't bathe much. We bathed occasionally, almost never by full immersion. I was a very clean person. I cleaned my teeth. I picked them. I bathed myself, what I suppose you would call with a sponge bath, quite frequently. But bathing, as you understand it, the kind of daily shower regimen of your time, was entirely unknown in my era. And it is literally the case that many people went months or even years without taking what you would define as a bath.
On that happy note, enjoy your summer, sir. I'll visit with you again. As always, thanks for your insight. It's good to have a Founding Father's phone number. Thomas Jefferson, thanks for joining us today.
You know, when we disagree, as sometimes we do, I know we always disagree as rational friends. That's the standard of a republic. Thank you, sir.
Something to think about there. Thanks, Mr. Jefferson.